You are listening to a Raw Collective podcast.
Hello, and welcome to season two of What Matters Most, a podcast hosted by me, Antonia Preble, and my good friend, Jackie Maguire, who also happens to be a clinical psychologist. Together, we discuss issues that have a real impact on how we feel about and experience our lives. I get so much out of these conversations, and I hope you will too. Hello, everyone. Here we are, another episode of What Matters Most. But I have to say, what we're talking about today, Jackie, you're going to have to help me because I've got no idea about it. I can't relate to it at all. So, I'm just going to be, sitting here like a dummy because I just, have no idea what you're talking about and don't line at all with what we're talking about. You might hear a bit of sarcasm in my voice there, perhaps.
I actually couldn't tell. I thought, is she legitimately telling me she's got no connection to this, or does this embody Antonia fully?
I did actually think as I was saying that you were looking at me with a quite quizzical expression on your face. I was like, oh, no, she doesn't know
I'm not
that
I'm not getting the tone.
Well, my tone was very sarcastic because what we're talking about today is people pleasing, and I definitely am a people pleaser. So I am very interested to hear Jackie's thoughts on this topic because I do definitely relate to this. Jackie, are you a people pleaser?
I don't think so. Maybe I used to be. No, I don't think I actually am.
Good for you.
I think I always try and operate in a way that's respectful and kind to people, but I'm pretty assertive.
Yeah, good on you. Well, I hope to learn a lot from you and from this conversation, and I might be able to change my people-pleasing ways.
Maybe my family would sound too assertive sometimes. Hey, there's a middle ground.
There might be middle ground, and as we might get into it, there might be some positive elements to people-pleasing. But just to take a step backwards, I'm sure that everyone listening to this has heard the term people-pleaser. It's very common out there in the zeitgeist. But just so we are all on the same page and we're talking about the same thing, for the purpose of this conversation today, Jackie, would you be able to give us a definition of people pleasing?
And people pleasing is not a clinical diagnosis. It's not a formal term. It's a phrase, isn't it, to describe a set of behaviours, or I would talk about urges that sit behind behaviours for people. So for this podcast, people pleasing really is that an individual has a very strong urge or desire, almost like a physical pull to serve others, do things for others, to put other people's needs before their own, to either gain affection, love, care, inclusion, or to avoid conflict, judgment, shame. So there is a pure motivation behind providing things to other people, pleasing other people, either to get something positive or avoid something negative.
Mm-hmm. How common is it to be a people pleaser?
Well, there is some research that has been populated on the internet, but I am a geeky scientist, so I only really want to talk about research that I think has come from a very solid evidence base. However, this research that you can find studied about a group of 1,000 people, and they say overall about half of people would identify with that urge to please others in order to gain positive or avoid negative. Women were sitting at about 56%. Men were sitting at about 42%. So I think when you look through some of the thinking behind people pleasing and where that may stem from, that gender split was not surprising to me, because I think in a very stereotypical fashion, women are raised and brought up to care for others. And you see that from a mothering, parenting role or a teaching, nursing, caring role. And perhaps part of that is genetically embedded in terms of the nurturing aspect of being a female, that those stats are higher for women.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think in that study, there was like 49% overall
yes,
identified as people pleasers. So it's very likely that half of our listeners perhaps might identify as people pleasers.
And take them with a grain of salt.
Take it with a grain of salt. But if you do feel like you are someone that behaves in a way in order to win the affection and approval of other people, you're not alone. It is a very common driver in life, and that's what we're going to unpack and talk about today.
But you can kind of understand that, right? Because in almost every episode of What Matters Most, we discuss the core human need to belong. Mm-hmm. It is a fundamental requirement to survive and thrive as a human being, is to be part of the pack. And so it kind of makes sense, right? That if there are some things going on in your, you know, previously in your life or now that might make you anxious about your belonging or your worth or your value in the pack, that you would do what you need to do from an adaptive survival perspective to stay included.
So this really is a biological, evolutionary-based trait.
Well, yeah, there can be links to that.
Interesting. And again, this, as you said at the beginning, this isn't like a science term.
No.
So it's not like you're going to be diagnosed with people-pleasing syndrome. These are just a set of behaviours that might, in some areas in your life, be not helping you, or me, I should say, as much as they might be. So that's why we're talking about this today. But it's not like there's something wrong with you if you feel like you are someone who aims to please other people.
Yeah, but so if we just run with you today, because I was probably the focus of another episode, so you can be the focus of today. If we look through that lens of compassion, that human beings are clever, and so we adapt our behaviour to benefit ourselves, to survive. At some point in your life, Antonia, it was adaptive and useful for you to serve others, either to feel included, loved, cared for, seen, or to avoid criticism or rejection or hurt. So I would say if you've got a clear pattern of people-pleasing, there will be a route from where that stemmed from, and it was an adaptive behaviour for you at that time to preserve you, protect you, get your needs met, protect you from pain and hurt.
Yeah, and everything you just said, those list of behaviours, I can relate to. Like I want to avoid criticism. I want to feel included. I want to feel that people want me around. And the way to do that is to behave in a way that doesn't upset people. Yeah, respecting other people's...
Non-difficult,
yes.
And I suppose the most common signs of if you fall into that trap of people pleasing, because I think it is a trap because it won't serve you in the long run. It will have a dark side, as they say, is that you find it probably really difficult to say no to things. What if I make someone angry? What if they don't like me anymore? What if I end up with no friends if I say no to requests? Perhaps you always outwardly agree with people, even if internally you have a differing perspective. You know, so maybe you're the first one to laugh at someone's joke at a party, even when inside you're thinking, that is not funny, or you suppress your own true thoughts, or verbalize things like, God, that's such a great idea, really quickly, in terms of really trying to, I suppose, align yourself with the people around you. Perhaps you say sorry a lot when you're actually not at fault. So just that eagerness to bend over backwards to apologize or smooth the way for other people. Perhaps you look at your agenda, your diary, your schedule, and you think, I am just so busy, but how much of this busyness is for me, or how much of this busyness is for other people? Or perhaps you kind of are a bit lost with who you are or what's important to you because you've morphed into the group that surrounds you. Their views, their hobbies, their behaviours, really from that desire of wanting to be part of the clan.
Yeah, and again, it makes sense why we want this, right? Like, it is such a basic human driver to feel like we're part of the group and to feel like people want us part of the group, because in tribal societies, if we felt like our place in the group was under threat, then we literally would die because we'd be turfed out. And so that's the same primal fear that is coming up, but it's just we most likely are not going to die now, but we still feel those big fears, don't we?
Yes, and I think what's really interesting is that social pain is almost intricately tied to physical pain in your body. So the receptors that ring off between social and physical pain are almost identical. So when you feel lonely, isolated, excluded, it is really painful. I did just want to say, what is the difference between people pleasing and altruism, or caring for others, or
kindness,
or serving others, being kind? If you know anything about love languages, there are 5 love languages about how we kind of show our care and love for others, and service is one of those. We also know that altruism and giving and community service is one of the number one factors that leads to a meaningful and satisfied life. So what's the distinction between people pleasing, which is supposedly not a great thing for us to be falling into, and altruism, which is a well-regarded kind of element to life.
An adaptive way, as opposed to maladaptive
way. And I think the difference is what's the driver behind it? So with people-pleasing, the driver is to serve you, right? To gain the love, care, attention, belonging, or to avoid the conflict. With altruism and service, the driver is to serve others. And I think people with engaging in altruistic behaviours feel like they've got a choice to say no rather than just this urge to say yes all the time. So I think that's the distinction between the two.
And that's something to recognise in ourselves, because I think, like, I know for myself, I'm very aware when I'm in a people-pleasing mode. And by the way, it's not all the time, guys.
Okay, well, no, so let's follow that up. This is friendship mixed with therapy. Yeah. So when can you refrain, or when do you not feel the urge to people please?
When I feel secure in the relationship or in my role, whatever my role is. And this actually links to another question, is if people pleasing is linked to imposter syndrome, because I know for myself that if I'm having an imposter syndrome moment, then I go into an even more of a people-pleasing mode.
But all of that stems back to that lack of security, right?
Yes.
Or stability. Like, I feel like I've got...
Don't people-please Dan, for example.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask that when you're at home. Poor Dan. Bugger.
Poor Dan. He probably would wish
he can see you please everyone else and not him.
Not him. He's like, what did I do? I'm like, actually...
It's a positive, Dan.
Hey, take it as a compliment, Dan.
You get the authentic version of myself. Well, again, imposter syndrome is an entirely different concept and conversation. For those of you that haven't heard that term before, it was described a long time ago by 2 women to really talk about when we're new at something, or we don't feel confident in our ability in a new task or in a new group or an environment. How does that play up? We feel like we're acting and we're going to get caught out. We don't feel like we deserve to be there. There's actually been a lot of new discussion around imposter syndrome, which says, by labeling imposter syndrome, are we almost finger pointing that people, and particularly women, should feel like that? Or do we need to be turning our attention to the environment and the societal structures and the organisational structures that actually foster and create that feeling of people not being confident in their own ability, or feeling unable to speak up, or feeling like they're going to get caught out? So there's a really large discussion at the moment about equity and minorities with imposter syndrome, which
is
interesting.
Very interesting. So suggesting that it's the
structures
around it
that's facilitating imposter syndrome
for women, other minorities in particular.
Not that there's something fundamentally wrong or inept with women,
or even that we are biologically more inclined to feel like this. It's the environment that we are in that brings it out of us.
And so the podcast I was listening to, which had a Black American woman talking about this, said you can kind of think of imposter syndrome in terms of, why would you want women to climb the ladder to sit at a broken table? We need to fix the table. Mm. And it was quite powerful. It stuck
it
with
is.
Me.
Yeah.
Prepare for your next adventure with Emma Sleep. For over 7 years, Emma has transformed the sleep of more than 4 million people worldwide by working with sleep experts to carefully design and engineer products that provide great support and pressure relief for your most peaceful sleep ever. Now you can wake up feeling fully refreshed, recharged, and ready to face the day with a smile. Upgrade to the coolest, most supportive sleep today with their range of mattresses, mattress toppers, pillows, mattress protectors, and even ensembles and bundles where you can save more. And if you're still unsure about upgrading, don't worry. Emma Sleep offers a 120-night trial for their mattresses and beds. So on the occasion you don't find it a match for you, you can simply return it within the 120-day period and get 100% of your money back guaranteed.
But that's not all. They also offer a 10-year warranty for their mattresses and free delivery nationwide. So, what are you waiting for? Head over to emmasleep.co.nz and shop using our code YOUMATTER for an additional discount. So, going back to people pleasing, the desire to be liked and accepted and approved of, and often the behaviors to get that is to be really nice and kind.
Yes.
But I'm guessing that actually being nice and kind isn't the way to foster authentic, deep relationships that then you can be secure in. And that, in fact, if our goal is to feel secure in these relationships, there is a better way go about that.
Well, and I suppose that's another way of asking what the heck is the impact, right? If you spend the majority of your time serving others and not looking at yourself, what does that result in? That results in people that are often quite lost or don't have a really good grasp on who they are, what they value, what their personal goals are, what's important to them. Because how do you have the headspace for that introspection when you're spending so much of your time ensuring that the people around you are happy in themselves and happy with you? I think it's really difficult to form authentic relationships when you're not putting your own needs, wants, desires on the table. So you take a couple, for example, if someone in the relationship is people-pleasing the other all the time, it might be nice for a little while, but I actually don't think that would be satisfying for either party.
Agree.
Because then the partner of the people pleaser is like, who are you? Like, I come back to that concept of how do you like your eggs? And if you're always saying you like your eggs scrambled because that's how your partner likes them, but in fact you like
poached.
You like poached eggs. Well, one, your partner doesn't know you. Two, they can't do nice things for you. And that service and altruism is really important that your partner can give and care for you in that way. And how do you have really good, deep, meaningful discussions, debates, interests when you're not bringing anything to the table? You're just morphing into them. So there might be short-term gain from people-pleasing, but not in the long term. I think also for the people-pleaser, anger and resentment builds up, right? I don't think you serve from a people-pleasing perspective continuously without ever feeling, why does no one do this for me? Or, you know, actually I'm over this. Or one narrator journalist talked about it as being like a pressure cooker. At some point it's going to blow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Antonia, is that the case? When you serve and please others, does it build resentment internally?
I don't think I build resentment actually, but I think it builds anxiety.
Okay.
So that's another equally uncomfortable.
Terms of like, does it build a trap of I'm only safe here because I'm people pleasing and if I stop, will that disappear?
Yeah.
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 So it's a self-serving cycle.
It is. And I'm very aware of my
self-defeating cycle, should I say.
Yes, self-serving and unfortunately also self-defeating. I am aware of my tendency to people please, but I'm aware of it because of the work that I do and the things that I've sort of studied over the years. But it's also quite possible that someone, as you say, doesn't quite have the time to even self-reflect on the stuff because they're so busy people-pleasing. So I imagine it's possible for someone to perhaps not recognize that this is actually what's going on in their lives. Mm. So would you be able to talk a bit about how someone might, and we're not asking everyone to self-identify as people-pleasers because you just literally, like Jackie, might not be, but if someone was wanting to reflect a bit on their own patterns, what would be some things that people could look out for in their own lives that might suggest this is a way they behave?
Yeah, well, I think some core ones would be when somebody asks you a question, you don't even pause and take stock. You just jump and say yes, and then maybe moments later, hours later, you have that feeling of why did I say yes? I don't want to do that, or I'm tired, or I've got my own stuff I need to be doing, but I just feel this absolute need to ensure that I'm doing what somebody wants all the time. So just that quick response without pause or reflection. Perhaps you're noticing tension in your relationship at home because you're serving other people and putting that above your relationship needs or your family's needs. So there could be some tension around that. Perhaps you're fatigued and finding you're almost becoming burnt out because you're not looking after yourself. And so burnout is higher for people that identify as a people pleaser. And I think that makes complete sense. And I suppose it's just that, have you got a really good idea about who you are and what you like? And if you don't, is that because so much of your time is going to other people? You know, I can even think about grandparents that say yes to babysitting all the time and don't put any boundaries in because maybe they love their grandchildren that much, or maybe they don't want their kids to be upset with them.
Yeah, people pleasing can happen at any age,
yeah,
and any stage. So if you are a people pleaser, are you always a people pleaser, or can some situations bring it out in you more, and can you change if you want to?
Well, I think you've answered that question today because you've told me that you find you people please in some situations, yes, and you don't in others. So,
that's a common
I think
thing.
A case study of one plus my experience would say no. I think it can be context or group dependent, but I also think that can shift over your lifetime. So again, with awareness, our brains are neuroplastic, which means until the day we die, we have got an ability to shift and change the habits, the thinking pathways, the automatic behavioral responses in our brain. So if you have got, and I talk about neural pathways in your brain like roads. So if you stick with me for a minute, imagine you have got a highway in your brain that with a trigger at the start, and the trigger at the start might be, I feel uncomfortable, I don't feel like I belong, I feel like I don't deserve this position, like whatever your triggers are that you spoke about. Say you experience that trigger, and without any conscious thought, your brain now, after 30x something years, is on that highway of people pleasing, because you know the end result to that is that you will feel calmer and less anxious in the moment, right? So like you have got a highway in your brain that you have developed thick and heavy over your adolescent, adult life. Say you become aware of that and you're like, actually, I don't want to be like that anymore. This is impacting me, my relationship. You know, I want to get to a position where I feel like I know myself, I can put boundaries in place, I can be kind and caring and loving when I want to be, from a position of want rather than automatic pull into that behavior. I'm going to try and do this differently. I want to get to a position where I can take a moment to consider the request before I respond. I want to get to a position where I can look at my week and say, where are my non-negotiables in that week? And I'm going to prioritize those. And that's like you're now needing to build a new pathway, a new road in your brain. What we know from a habits perspective is that it is very difficult to stop a behavior that you've always done. It is much easier to build a new habit. So you don't want to go into your brain with a jackhammer. You just want to get your engineers on board and design a far better, faster, smoother freeway. So if you can think about it in that terminology, you know, how do you then go and build a new habit? You become aware of those triggers. When you notice those triggers, you have a structure of behavior where you're going to say to yourself, I'm going to stop and pause. And anytime someone asks me that, I'm either going to say, I just need to think about that. Can I come back to you? And you're going to practice that. Or you're going to say, I'd really love to be able to help you, but unfortunately, I can't do that today. You know, you're just going to have like some set pre-rehearsed go-to responses that enable you in that moment when you are triggered to respond in a different way. And the more that you do that, the more you embed and lay in, my whole body's moving as I talk to Antonia because I
thought she is on a new freeway.
So that's part of it, is literally a behavioral response of the more I habit something new, the more my brain will go down the new pathway rather than just diverting to habit. But I also think you've got to be really clear and reflective for yourself about, what do you value? Where do you want to spend your time? How do you want to be perceived by other people? How do you want to develop authentic relationships? Like, it takes some self-reflection, right?
It does. And I think the desire to be an authentic person and to live an authentic life is a very fundamental one for so many people, including me. And people-pleasing takes you away from that. So how can we practice being our authentic self, living an authentic life?
And before we get there, the other thing I should have said was, you also have to believe you're worthy and important to do this. So your needs are as important as the people around you. And if me saying that evokes a really strong feeling in you, then that's where the work needs to start, is by learning to like yourself, form a relationship with yourself. I don't know where I heard this, but it's something I think it's really true, is that the most important relationship you have in your life is with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so valuing yourself sits at the fundamental level of this conversation, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of comes first. But if you're like, how do I try this out? I think it's one, practicing that no, but two, it's being able to assert your opinion, because part of that is the folding to other people's views, right? It starts small and gradual. So,
because it's scary to do this.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because it's that primal fear of not belonging, right? If that's where this is being driven from, or if it's being driven from a lack of self-belief, then you might not feel like you've got the confidence to say no, or to say, I actually view that differently. So I would look at your life and say, are there small things you can learn to say no to? Like if your partner says, would you like scrambled eggs? Maybe you go, no, actually I'd like poached today, you know, and to see how that lands and to see how you feel afterwards. Because my assumption is if you start small with somebody that's safe, because I think that's also really important, choose to experiment this with the people that are safe, you know, safe bets, then you can kind of
look out, Dan.
Well, but you say you already do it with Dan.
Yeah.
So like, is there a friend that's a safe friend
yeah.
where you can do it with? Then I think it's about seeing the response you get and kind of bathing in that. Like, what is it like to be in a situation where I can hold a different opinion, where I can say no, and that be okay? And you actually kind of need experiences of small wins. And
I can feel that in my body
can
as
you?
You're talking.
Like that makes you feel anxious.
Yeah. For me, it's, I think, less about saying no. Like I think I do have okay boundaries around that, possibly just because I have two small children and so I just have to say no. But it's more about, yeah, disagreeing with people.
Okay. So, okay, let's live therapy. Okay. So give me a setting with a person or a topic that you feel like would be a really small, safe, easy thing to voice an alternate opinion.
The first thing that comes to me, which is incredibly safe, would be talking to a friend about, we're going out for dinner, deciding which restaurant to go to.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So next time that happens, what would you normally do? Would you just let the other person decide?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would.
So next time you're going out for dinner with a friend, your homework is to voice where you want to go, which means you need to know where you want to go. And so this is the issue for some people, that they don't know because they never allowed themselves to indulge in their own likes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you, or do you know what you like?
I do know what I like.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
So, Antonia, next time I come to Auckland and we go out for dinner, where are we going?
We're going to go where I want to go, Jackie.
You know?
Enough of this where you want to go.
And so if I
that actually doesn't
you,
happen, Jackie and I never go out for dinner.
Never go out for dinner.
But we're going to go where I want to go.
And so if I said to you, I really want to go to Badoozy down in the Viaduct, love their pasta, it's great.
I'd say, well, yeah, I've actually been there a few times and I'd like to go somewhere I haven't been before.
Okay. You know, so,
yeah,
you know,
sort of thing.
So
yeah.
It's like start really small.
Yeah.
With someone that, even if they disagree, they're still going to be your mate, you know? And the way in which we manage with anxiety is that you do it like a stepladder. You start small and you get bigger. And so maybe, you know, the top rung of that ladder would be sitting down with your family of origin, saying that you have a different political view to them. You know, who knows what it would be.
Whatever that is
whatever
for
that
you
is
in your
for
life.
You, you know? But it's kind of working through that, those steps, and reteaching yourself that if you differ in opinion, if you say no, that the consequences are that you're still loved, seen, cared for, important, and that you won't be rejected.
The relationship can cope and can hold that.
And if the relationship cannot cope, if you start to stick up for yourself and the other person doesn't like it, which could be the case for some people because they're getting great benefit out of you being available or doing what they want or buffering them all the time, then that could be very difficult and hard. But I would say, is that relationship one that you want to invest in long term? Mm-hmm. Because how is that relationship serving you, or is it all one-sided?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So when Jackie and I were thinking about sponsors for this show, it was really important to both of us that we partnered with companies that align with our values and our way of thinking.
Absolutely. It was a non-negotiable.
So we are really delighted to team up with Whoop, a beautiful food box company that helps you create delicious dinners in under 30 minutes.
Do you know, Antonia, my family have used Whoop over the years, and if you're anything like me, which I know you are, life is busy and the mental load is large, and I'm always looking for effective shortcuts to make life simpler and easier. And with Whoop, it is amazing. The veggies are pre-chopped, the sauces are handmade, and man, can you taste the difference. The recipes are just so easy to follow, and what I love is that the ingredients are sourced right here from New Zealand. And Antonia, this is the bit I know you will love. With Whoop, there is so much less chopping, less mixing, less faffing, and what does that mean? It means less cleaning up.
Yes, Jackie, you know me very well. The no chopping and way less cleaning up factors could be my favourite parts of Whoop. And I actually find that Whoop just makes my whole day easier. Just knowing that I don't have to think of what we're going to eat, I don't have to go to the supermarket, I just don't have to think about dinner at all is a huge weight off my mind.
I'm getting hungry talking about all this beautiful food. Do you know another wonderful thing about Whoop is that everything is recycled through their back to base program. You just rinse out the containers, you put all your packaging back in the box, even the soft plastics, and you leave it out to be collected when your next box is delivered.
And if all that wasn't tempting enough, Whoop are offering our listeners 30% off their first box. So you just head to whoop.co.nz and use the code podcast at the checkout. That's whoop.co.nz and use the code podcast. Okay, so we're going to start small, work on creating new habits. Is there anything else that people pleasers can do to change their people-pleasing ways?
Yeah, sure. I think partly is you have to accept that not everybody will like you all the time.
Mm.
And that's uncomfortable for
that's
a lot
tough.
Of people
yeah.
to reconcile that, especially if you've always wanted everyone to like you all the time. But I think part of that is life. We gel with some people. We don't gel with others. Some people love us. I'm sure I grind some people up the wrong way without any intention. But I think part of that is some radical acceptance that not everybody will like us, that sometimes things will be uncomfortable. But can you surround yourself with people and have relationships with people that can manage the uncomfortable and that can hold the solidness of your relationship, even if there are minor disagreements?
And that radical acceptance of course, recognizing and surrendering to the fact that not everyone will like you, because of course we do know that. How do you practice that? Is it literally sitting with that thought and dealing with the feelings that come up with it and grounding them?
I think there's lots of ways people do that. I would say, can you be aware of it and name it? I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling the drive to please. You know, like, can you just name that for yourself? And we know very clearly when you name something, the intensity of that emotion drops. Mm. Can you kind of sit and hold the uncomfortable emotion, knowing that it will pass? And again, you know, I know this is something we've spoken about before. Emotions are like bell curves. They come and go. They have a peak. And once they're realized and recognized, they dissipate. And so if we try and avoid emotions or suppress them, they get bigger. And really, that's what we're doing with people pleasing, right? We're trying to avoid the unpleasant. So, you know, the actual internal feeling grows larger and larger and larger over time. So my way of kind of picturing that is I'm just going to hold that unpleasantness in one hand, and I'm going to do my best to act in a way that is beneficial whilst holding the unpleasantness.
That makes sense. And it's a good thing that we can all practice.
And you can, again, breathe from your belly, ground yourself in the room, go for a walk, distract yourself, talk to someone, journal. All of those things are strategies that help you manage uncomfortable feelings.
And we often come back to those strategies, don't we, in these episodes? Like, they really are strategies that help across the board in your life.
I think it's also really important to know that when we're trying to shift a behavior, that sometimes we can swing completely in the opposite direction. So say you've started to go, hey, I notice that I fall into this pattern of serving and pleasing others at the detriment to myself. I want to do that differently. The risk can be that you then do a full 180 and become quite harsh. So you lose the kindness and the warmth. You become so assertive in a cold way because you just are like determined to protect your boundaries, determined to put yourself first. And then that can be unhelpful too, right? So I think it's useful to know for people when you're trying to shift and change behavior, we definitely have a tendency to completely swing, whereas actually probably where we want to end up is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that's great advice.
The last thing, Antonia, I think, is that you actually have to learn to like yourself and grow your self-esteem. So part of that is, can you do some exercises to work out what your strengths are? You can do that online. Look up a strengths finder. Can you try and find what you like doing, you know, invest some time
and
into doing activities that you like, and then bathe in the feeling of joy or satisfaction afterwards? Can you ask for some feedback from people that are safe and who love you or like you a lot around, why are you my friend? And it's interesting, I've done this exercise with my girlfriends. I heard it on a Simon Sinek podcast. And those of you that don't know Simon Sinek, he is the man behind The Why. You've got to find your why in life from a values driving perspective. And you know, he spoke about the fact that so many of us don't really know what our strengths are or don't really have an understanding of why people like us.
We focus on our weaknesses, right? Like we're so aware of our weaknesses.
We're so aware of others and we're so aware of other people's greatnesses because we just do that internal comparison often. And so his exercise was to ask your friends, why are you my friend? And when they give you the obligatory answer of you're kind or you're caring, And to be like, now, why do you really like me? Like, can you give it with examples? Can you think deeper about that? And to really get a solid response around why someone values you as a friend. And so I did this with my girlfriends. I wrote them each a page long with my really close friends. I wrote them a page of why they were meaningful to me as my friend. I actually loved doing that to give to someone. That was an act of service.
It's a beautiful thing to give to someone.
And it was such a connecting bonder and just made me feel good.
Yes.
One friend wrote back to me. And you know, I know they love me as their friend,
yeah.
But people found that exercise really difficult.
Yeah.
Why is that the case? Why do
it's
people find that so hard?
Right?
It's making yourself vulnerable.
Because if your heart is open, which it must be in that exercise, then it could possibly get hurt.
Yeah.
But I imagine that you were able to be, well, you were in a position to be able to recognize that the fact they didn't get back to you was
not about me.
It's not about you.
No, and they're still my very, very good friends.
Yes.
But, you know, going through that process of why are you my friend? What do you like about me? You know, with some safe people might be a way of discovering some really positive aspects of yourself that perhaps you've lost sight of.
That's so lovely. And even as a baby step before that, you could just write yourself a letter about the reasons why.
Yep.
You love yourself. So as a final point, to just sort of flip this conversation for the people who don't recognize themselves as people pleasers, but probably have people in their life who are, do you have any advice for them about how to help people who have this urge and drive to be liked and accepted? What do they need? What can we do for those people?
Okay, so I'll take this one, eh? Seeing I think I'm not really a people pleaser, but how am I even aware of the people in my life who might be people pleasers? Have I even stopped to give that attention? No, because it's not something that I grapple with, so therefore probably I'm not cognizant of it. So what would be useful? I think it would be helpful to write down a list of people in your life, be it your closest friends, your acquaintances, your colleagues, like who are the people that you have quite consistent contact with? And then if you like put your name in the middle and you draw people's names around you in a circular form, so the closest people to you would be closest to you, kind of in diameter from you. And
sort
then,
of concentric circles going out.
Yeah. And then, you know, those that are acquaintances might be, but you have a lot of contact, might be on the edge of that circle. And then can you draw arrows between your name and the other person? So say, Antonia, I'm in the middle and you are part of my circumference, my circle. Do I draw a double-headed arrow as in I give to you and you give to me? Or if it's always I feel like I'm giving to you in the relationship, I would have an arrow only pointing to your name. If I feel like I don't give much to our relationship, but you give a huge amount to me, the arrow would go from you to me.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just first identify the dynamic between ourselves and the people in our lives around energy, time, resource, care. Is it equal or is it one-sided from either side? Then I think if you look at that and if you've got any people in your life where you go, I actually think they give way more to me. Maybe they're the ones that always phone me and I don't phone them. Maybe when I ask for help, they always show up. But when they ask me for help, I'm unavailable or they just never ask me for help. You know, if you identify that, then I think it's really important you, one, become cognizant of it. Two, do you start to provide things for that person without them asking you to do that? So do you do kind, nice things for them so they get to experience some care and love and affection back that hasn't come only from them serving you? Like they've got to receive the benefits of your friendship without needing to solicit that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, depending, I suppose, on how close that person is to you, how intimate that relationship is, do you have a conversation with them? Do you ever feel like this? Do you ever feel like you have a need to say yes? Or do you feel like this relationship is equal? You're so important to me. I really want to ensure that I feel like I give you as much as you get from this relationship. Do you feel able to say no? You know, and that will depend on the level of friendship or relationship, right? The closer you are, the more likely you are to have to that conversation. Someone that's less close to you, but you're aware that they're a people pleaser, maybe you just start to put some boundaries in so you're doing the work for them. Like you don't ask them for help as much as you used to. If they offer something, you go, thank you so much for your help. Really, really appreciate it. But I'm actually okay. I've got it this time. So you don't want to make them feel like their help's being rejected because that probably increases that urge for them to please you. So you want to validate them and ensure they feel safe, but you want to behaviorally shift that dynamic.
I think that's really great advice, Jackie. I love that it can apply to all your relationships, regardless of the level of closeness and intimacy, because if it's one that doesn't feel like it would be appropriate to sustain a conversation like that, you just do the work yourself.
Yeah.
So you can recognize the dynamic. And if it is unequal and that they do more, you can completely independently adjust that so it's more even and the relationship would benefit as a result. And then if it is closer and could sustain a conversation like this, it would be a really beautiful thing to have.
I'm thinking like a colleague that always offers to stay late or always offers to pick up the slack. And that's probably served you super well if that person does that. But maybe you go, I recognize this. Like they're putting in way more effort, way more time than actually what is what's required from them. So instead, I'm just going to say, hey, thank you so much for your work today. It's really important to me. You go home, you know, go and get your recovery. Go and do things that you love. You know, it's your time now. You know, you say it warm and with love, but it's clear.
That's so lovely. And when you were saying about telling people how much you appreciate them, that really resonated with me because obviously that's the thing that I look for. So that to me would be a great way to open a conversation like this is to, before you even start, to really affirm the depth of the connection and the robustness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Useful?
Very useful. This is, very, very useful. Thank you, Jackie.
Okay, so in all good therapy, you have to say what you took away from it. So that's my question to you, Antonia Preble. What were your takeaways from this session?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is practicing the small, scary things in order to build a new highway. That makes a lot of sense to me, and I can see how it is actionable because I can just feel in my body how practicing that and having a positive response from it would give me confidence to do it again. Mm. And it would be a great like self-affirming kind of behavior, but that it does need to start small, a little bit scary, but small in order for that to work.
Nice.
So that was, great. But thank you very much. And I hope to all my fellow people pleasers out there, I hear you, I see you, I feel you. We're in this together, but we can improve should we want to. But I hope you guys also got a lot out of that. Thank you, Jackie. And we will see you next time.
Ciao.
Bye.
That was What Matters Most for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you did enjoy this week's episode, it would be great if you could rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast, as that helps let other people know that we're here. Thanks again. See you next time.